This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batson with Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, commenting on Ukraine conflict from the point of view of six capitals. We're now in Washington, D.C., the Imperial Center. The headline on the New York Times by Peter Baker about softening support or voices in the Democratic Party asking for clarity, asking for the American people to be rallied for the long conflict in Ukraine. This is a roundabout way of saying that there are Democratic voices who are loyal to the president, who applaud the president's program, who vote for him often, but they want to know where we're going because they can see in the polling the American people are either indifferent, confused, or turning against the endless boosting of Ukraine's defense budget with no clear victory path, with no speech from the Oval Office about why we fight. Professor, the Democratic Party is anxious for a lot of reasons. I mean, the prosperity is questionable, the recession is imminent, the sticky inflation, the president's age is now a factor for the Democratic Party. There are doubts everywhere, but the war, is that something that the president can solve? Can D.C. solve the war for the Democratic Party?
Well, it's what strategists often say when they talk about World War II, that Hitler could have won if he had been a different person. So I think that an American administration could preside over a successful effort to keep the Russians from taking over Ukraine. But it's not clear to me that this particular administration is able to do that. And the reason is just what you point to, that Americans don't really know where we're going. As they say in the military, if you don't know where you're going, then any road will do. And we're following a path which is essentially sort of like going to the supermarket and pushing a cart around and putting things in as they strike your interest, rather than, say, having planned an intervention. We never sat down and tried to envision what the whole war was going to be, what it was going to require. And the worst thing is that the president never told the American people what this was about and how high the stakes were. I mean, we're now in the third decade of the 21st century, and I believe that for at least the next 30 years or more, the shape of international politics will have been determined by the way this war is terminated. But you don't hear any talk about that at all. There's been no address to a joint session of Congress. There are not constant press availability. Mr. Biden he doesn't talk a lot, and he certainly has not laid out any kind of a plan that is intelligible. Furthermore, nobody around him really knows much about war. I think I'm impressed by General Austin. He may not be General Pershing he's a four-star. He understands how you win wars. You need to have the weapons. You need to have the men. You have to know what you're doing. You have to do it at the right time and all the rest. And when I listen to him, I think, yes, here's somebody who has some idea what's going on. But when I listen to the others, they're still living in the world of a sort of international relations advanced seminar room, which is to say somewhere in the upper atmosphere. The White House really has no answer. They're not giving an answer. They're not helped by their press secretary, but what really cripples them is their president. We don't know what he thinks, and he isn't making it clear. So what we're getting is a kind of sense of dissatisfaction and restlessness. So as you point out, the New York Times is supporting Biden, but they're not really supporting the war. Republicans are increasingly opposed to it. If you go to any of your old good old right-wing websites, you'll find that 80-90% of the people are opposed to the war. And at least one of our most popular network commentators is absolutely dead set against the war. And millions of people listen to these people. And if you don't make the other argument, this is what's going to prevail. So I would say that we Americans, we really haven't won a war since World War II. And as I look, as I come to understand the fault lines in our system, I feel that even a Vietnam-style collapse, which was forced by the Congress when President Ford wanted to do what was necessary to keep to our solemn commitments and so forth, that even that kind of collapse of American morale is possible. And, of course, Vietnam was very, very consequential. Oh, it was a long time ago, but that 1975, but a defeat in Ukraine, and particularly accompanied by an American, a kind of a nervous breakdown of the American populace and the American political class and the elite and all the rest, that would be incomparably more consequential. It would be of absolute global significance. And in another talk, we can discuss what the repercussions would be, but they would be very, very bad for the free countries of Asia. They'd be very bad for Europe, and they'd be very bad for us. So I take this, if I see the New York Times being even more wishy-washy than usual, that signals something. This is a thermometer into what the American elite, so-called, the self-proclaimed elite, are thinking. And they don't know anything at all about the history of warfare and how it has determined the history of humanity.
Well, let me restate how I read the New York Times. Tell us why we're fighting. Because what we have from the White House so far is we don't want to go too far with our weapon supplies, F-16s, long-range missiles, because we don't want to destroy Russia. But we don't want to back off because we don't want to destroy Kyiv. That strikes me as a reasonable position for a year, but it's not reasonable for the second year. Does the president want to win? What is your measure of how he's conducting this war? A little bit, but not too much.
Well, think back to the statements that he made at the very beginning. He was saying Putin cannot remain in power and all the rest. And they're all saying we're going to go the whole way. And I thought to myself, I've heard this before, and I've studied the histories of wars. And remember, France was invaded by Germany, and Germany nearly succeeded. But in 1917, the French army was mutinying, even though, and they were mutinying on French territory. So I think that that this reasonable objective of the kind of just right war outcome, in a way, is misleading. It's a will of the wisp. That's not how wars end, as I said at the beginning. Wars end, as Clausewitz said, with the Die Schlacht, the slaughter, the great battle. And, you know, after Yorktown, the Brits give up. After the Battle of the Bulge, then it's pretty clear that Germany doesn't have any more resources left. This is, you know, after the capture of the French emperor by the Germans in 1871, and followed by the communist stuff, the French decide that they actually have to put down internal rebellion, and that's more important than defeating Germany. So we were very unrealistic, and we were sort of used words wildly without having any clear plans. But one thing we should have learned from Vietnam is that if you have a plausible and a credible plan, that where 1 + 2 and so forth, they add up, the American people will support it. In fact, the Americans always supported the war right to the end. But the elites got very, very confused, and the media got very confused, and the country became divided and confused as a result. Now, I'm not going to blame them here. I would blame the our leadership. It was faulty leadership, and it was particularly President Kennedy set up the defeat by making some ghastly mistakes. And by the end of 1962, it was very hard to see how we were going to win. Then Lyndon Johnson tried to avoid dealing with it. And then when Nixon and Kissinger came in, it was really too late. And furthermore, they had already written the thing off, thinking that they were about to get China in return. But that turned out not to be the case. So I think that the administration is culpable for not pounding home, and the Democratic Party and the Republicans too, pounding home that is actually matters a lot to the world who wins this war, keeping at it. And in order to do that, they've got to have a map that they can hold up and say, this is how we're going to get there. They don't have that map. They improvise. The Ukrainians say, well, you know, we need some planes. And they say, well, I mean, you've already got tanks. We need planes for. Well, think back to World War II and your basic blitzkrieg. You had, you know, German Leopard tanks or Tiger tanks, whatever they were, Panther tanks on the ground. But you also had these things up in the air with sirens on them called Stukas. And that was what a blitzkrieg was. Armor and air go together. If you're using armor and you don't have an air cap, you're going to get smoked, as they say. And the people who are making these decisions don't have any idea of that sort of thing. And, of course, we saw that in Afghanistan, where the most critical decisions about where to deploy, what to defend, was it going to be Bagram Air Base, or was it going to be, you know, the embassy, or was it going to be the airport? It was this national security advisor who's still wet behind the ears. He was making these decisions, and the result was one of the most extraordinary instantaneous defeats of a great power in all of history. So I come down very, very hard on the administration for not leading. I mean, the president's supposed to lead, and that means, I mean, FDR did lead. You know, after Pearl Harbor was attacked, he didn't have a press conference 2 weeks later. He went into the Congress and he gave a very misleading, but a real spellbinding, brilliant speech. And he got a declaration of war with only one man, Vito Marcantonio from New York, voting against it. He had the ability to lead. This administration does not.
We're headed to Beijing. Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations. This is Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.